Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by ServPro. Cleaning, restoration, construction.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I want to begin by talking some UGA recruiting today because I sort of get the impression that's what we're going to be doing a lot of over the course of the next few weeks. It seems like, kind of right on schedule here, that's starting to heat up. I thought that Jeff Sintel, when he joined us on Friday's show here on Dog Nation Daily presented by ServPro, had kind of an interesting way of saying this, saying that he expected some big booms kind of between now through July. And I think one of the positions where some of this seems to be perhaps kind of taking shape the most here right now might be at the wide receiver spots. I want to kind of focus in on a couple of guys here for a moment that we have talked about a good bit before, and then a name that on our show we perhaps haven't talked about enough that we might end up talking about a whole lot more there as well. So it seems like right now that there could be a lot of energy around Georgia and the wide receiver position. Now, what I find to be somewhat interesting about this is that in recent years, not to say that you don't like, you know, guys like Nitro Tuggle and others that Georgia brought in, but in recent years, it sort of seems like, you know, Georgia has kind of utilized the transfer portal as a way of sort of supplementing its wide receiver room, right? And I would say to great effect. We think that Colby Young has a chance to be a very good player for Georgia this season, for instance, and guys like Landon Humphrey, Michael Jackson, maybe they might have their moment too. You know, guys like Dominic Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas were here a year ago and learned the Georgia offense and kind of got acclimated to the system. And now we think, certainly the case of Dominic Lovett based on G-Day, but perhaps Ra-Ra Thomas too, kind of big time, you know, ready to go. And they could be a big part of the story for Georgia at the, you know, the wide receiver position. But that doesn't mean that Georgia is now sort of exclusively looking at transfer portal as a way of finding its next wide receivers, that the high school ranks are still really important on this too. And there are some pretty big name high school wide receivers who over the course of the next couple of months, and perhaps in some cases even sooner than that, are ready to make their decisions. We have reason to believe that Georgia could be in a very good spot. I'll invite you to check out at DogNation.com a story that Jeff posted yesterday with C.J. Wiley, the four-star receiver out of a powerhouse and loaded Milton team. Wiley's got a series of official visits coming up. One of those obviously is to Georgia. And then after that, we're led to believe that Wiley could be ready to make his decision. Let me show you this on the screen, what Wiley has told Dog Nation. As Jeff wrote, so when the official visits for Wiley are done, he feels he'll be able to settle into his college decision. Jeff writing, he'd like to have that put away before his senior season arrives so he can make sure his Eagles tap out this fall as a two-time GHSA state champion, meaning hope they can go back-to-back here on that. Jeff writes that Wiley doesn't plan to take any more visits until his officials begin on May 31st with USC. Then he's going to see Alabama, Georgia, and Florida State. He's got a rough decision timeline in place. He said after all of those official visits, that's when he'll make his decision. And what the key factor will be in that decision, the quote from Wiley here is, probably just a good coach that can develop me on and off the field. I want good communication with all the coaching staff, a place where I can get to the league and a place where I can get a good education. So that's what C.J. Wiley says about what he's looking for his college decision. Those of us who are Georgia partisans would say, well, it sounds like UGA checks all of those boxes. We'll find out soon, I guess, if Wiley feels the same way. But early indications are Georgia could be in a good spot here for C.J. Wiley, one of the things that I believe is going to make the summer really fun. Now, Wiley, who, if you check out some of the recent stuff from Jeff, especially if you're watching like Before the Hedges presented by Kroger during the week, is putting together some really impressive workouts and kind of putting together a very impressive, you know, kind of body type right now. This is a young man that has the look of a receiver who could be incredibly successful at the college level. And so obviously, if Georgia continues down a positive path with Wiley, that'll certainly be good news. Not the only receiver, though, for whom that is true. Another guy that just so happens to be kind of trained by our good friend Terrence Edwards is Travis Smith, wide receiver out of Westlake High School. This is another receiver that's perhaps charting sort of a similar path to Wiley here, and that he's got some official visits coming up. And then shortly after that, he also will be ready and able to make his college decision, much the same way we say, you know, it kind of seems like you know, Wiley in Georgia may be in an okay spot right now. You're at least optimistic about all of that. I think when it comes to Travis Smith, another four-star in-state here right now, I think you once again have to feel okay about the spot that Georgia perhaps finds itself in with Smith. First of all, he's on a Team Westlake that has a guy in Juan Gaston that we know that Georgia's also pursuing. So there's a little bit of a, I don't want to say package deal here, but there's some comfort in knowing that one of your teammates might be making the same journey you are over to Athens. In fact, when Travis Smith talked to Jeff Sintel the other day, he did mention that, as well as also talking about right now what it is that he likes about Georgia. And if you're a longtime UGA fan, you have dreamed forever of hearing recruits say what Travis Smith told to Jeff Sintel the other day in a simple amount of words, why Georgia has a spot near the top of his list right now. Here is Travis Smith.
What do you like best about Georgia? If it did become Georgia, what would be the big reason why?
What is?
They win.
They just won the national championship, not just last year, but previous years before that. And I think they in a great road ahead of them just to, you know, keep finishing.
So, as I said before, a lot of us who've been fans for a long time had to hear for a long time about, well, you got to go to so-and-so if you want to win. You know, go to Georgia if you want to, but if you want to win championships, you got to go to so-and-so school. Over the course of years, we've all heard that. But now we're hearing that of the obvious and irresistible choice might be UGA because of the success that they've had. And it just sounds good, kind of rolling off the tongue when Travis Smith says that. It sounds good to our ears to hear that all of a sudden now that's the kind of pitch that Georgia's able to offer here. Not only can we get you to the league, not only can we give you, you know, a chance to be a part of a prolific offense, but if you want to play the game at the highest level, if you want to win, you would obviously come here, and I think that's really good news. Now, here's the other part of this, because Travis Smith and C.J. Wiley are guys we've certainly talked about plenty, but a guy that we maybe haven't talked about enough is also kind of out in the news and the headlines right now there as well. It's really interesting to me just how I think deep and talented the sort of Savannah area has been over the course of the last couple of years. And a receiver who sort of hails from that part of the state is a guy named Thomas Blackshear. And Blackshear has put out an interesting announcement here over the course of the last, 24 hours or so, that he is now readying for a decision. He's getting ready to make his choice on May 12th. That's less than a week from now. That's, Sunday, right? I guess I'm doing a little Mother's Day announcement there for Blackshear. Blackshear, who has a stated list of finalists that include Georgia and Tennessee and Florida State, is getting ready to make his college announcement. So this is not a prediction for me that Blackshear is going to choose UGA, but it is an encouragement to pay attention to this, because I would say the relationship that Georgia has with Blackshear is probably a little bit stronger than the level of discussion that he has gotten on this show here thus far. We've talked far more about guys like Smith and Wiley, maybe not enough about a guy like Blackshear, but it sounds like Georgia is also in a pretty good situation there with him. A nice time, in other words, to have such a deep crop of talented receivers here in state, as Georgia, by all accounts, seems to be kind of prioritizing a lot of these players in its home state here for this 2025 signing class. And to kind of go back to a topic that I sort of touched on a little earlier, for people who sort of have seen guys like Colby Young and Landon Humphreys and Michael Jackson and Dominic Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas, if you want to count the tight end Ben Urosek, you know, coming into the program over the last couple of years, for people who sort of assume that, well, I guess that means that Georgia is approaching receiver different than approaches other positions. Because in other positions, Georgia has used high school football recruiting as the bedrock foundation for all of those position groups and the roster overall. There has been at least some assumption maybe that because of NIL or the nature of the position or whatever else, that Georgia was just approaching wide receiver differently. Well, the actions kind of in these early days, the 2025 class would suggest, maybe that's not exactly the case. And Kirby Smart perhaps foreshadowed all of this back in December when he let it be known that, hey, Georgia still looks to bring in wide receivers the same way it does every other position group. This is a reminder of what Kirby Smart said back then.
Yeah, I think I'm excited about all those guys. Certainly, you know, you build your wideout room through high school. We feel like we should build every room through our high school. But over the last, 2 to 3 years, we've gone into the portal and been able to get some experienced wideouts. I think that's critical. I do think you can play early in college football at wideout. I think people have proven that. George proved it. AD proved it. Jermaine proved it. They all proved it. You can go out. Dylan Bell proved it. You can go out and play as a freshman. But it's nice to get some SEC experience in the two guys we got last year. We need, you know, we need more depth at receiver. It's a position that we're thin at, and that we've got to have enough people to surround Carson with to create weapons.
And, of course, what Kirby Smart says there about surrounding Carson with weapons can be said for whoever the starting quarterback in 2025 is and in 2026. There's always going to be a need to surround them with weapons. Now, let me see if I can kind of sum all of this up and put a bottom line on this here for a moment. I think this fall, I think Georgia fans are likely going to be very glad to have a collection of transfer receivers, whether it be guys who've been here for going on more than a year or guys like Colby Young who are new arrivals. I think that Georgia fans this year are going to be very glad for the supplement guys like that provided to the overall roster. Mixing in with guys like Dylan Bell and Anthony Evans that Georgia's recruited out of high school to kind of fully complement and fill out the Georgia wide receiver situation. Transfers on this year's team, in other words, I believe going to pay very big dividends. But moving forward, it sounds like Georgia's also got its sights set on making sure it attacks the high school ranks at that spot, wide receiver, just as aggressively as it does any other position group. We know that wide receiver recruiting can get pretty tricky. There's NIL stuff. There's the expectation sometimes, at least seemingly among the players, that hey, I got to get my targets, I got to get my touches, I got to get my glory in a way that doesn't always come as a demand at other position groups. And yet that's not scaring Georgia away from being involved with some very big names in state right now. Maybe as soon as this weekend, perhaps over the next couple of months. It certainly sounds like Georgia's in a pretty good place to bring home some big-time wide receivers from the state of Georgia here for this 2025 class. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by ServPro. We are happy to have you with us no matter how you get to us. It's video across all platforms at 10 a.m., radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast, wherever you find them, Apple, Spotify, posting the show at the worldfamousdognation.com, everything else in between. Just really, really happy to have you here today. And so thankful to our friends at ServPro who make it all possible there as well. And one of the things I love about ServPro is that I think it's a great name to know for so many of the people in our audience, because I talk to you all the time. You're homeowners or you're business owners, and sometimes that business has a storefront or some sort of warehouse space or something like that. In other words, you have commercial property, or you have, you know, property that you just your personal property that you live in. You have rental property in some case. And obviously, if you own property long enough, the one thing you're going to know is at some point in time, there's going to be some damage somehow, some way. Fire breaks out. Hopefully not, but it does happen. Water, honestly, over the course of time, pretty much anything's going to deal with a little bit of water damage at some point in time. And so when this stuff occurs, there's a mess to be cleaned up. And that's where the restoration specialist of ServPro can step in and do great things for you, because they can get it all cleaned up, put it all back together like it never even happened. That is what ServPro is all about. Each and every franchise is also independently owned and operated. Now, I always tell you that because I believe that means those that own those ServPro franchises are just as dedicated to a satisfactory outcome for you as you are for yourself. That's why I want you to check them out. If you've got fire damage, if you've got water intrusion, if you've got a mess that needs to be cleaned up, the restoration specialists of ServPro are ready to help. Online at ServPro.com. S-E-R-V. Online at ServPro.com. All right, we got Connor Riley here coming up in a couple of minutes. Good to have Connor back on the show. A lot to discuss with him. We'll certainly get into that here in just a little bit. Prior to that, though, I want to go around the doghouse. Now, if you were with us yesterday, we talked about this. That total confession a year ago, we got a couple of things wrong. We kind of made fun of those, including ESPN's Reese Davis, who said Michigan would be better than Georgia. We'll never know if Michigan truly was better than Georgia, but you have to acknowledge Michigan was the national champion. Georgia wasn't. The big difference between the two teams, Michigan did play better against the one common opponent, Alabama. Georgia lost that game. Michigan won it. So from that standpoint, begrudgingly, you got to give a little credit to the Wolverines, and you got to give a little credit to those who picked Michigan. We talked about this yesterday. Same thing for the Crimson Tide that I mentioned. You know, we were all over Kirk Herbstreit because Herbstreit, who seemingly at this point in time is only sort of half even involved in the world of college football, he's been spread very thin. His analysis has suffered because of it. that he was sort of re-racking the same opinion about Alabama that he had tried to trot out in 2022 in the hopes that nobody would notice. But while he ultimately didn't get it right with Alabama winning the national championship, he did get it right in that Bama did beat Georgia, and we have to acknowledge that. It was a head-to-head game, and Bama just got the best of Georgia on that particular day. We laughed at Herb Street. It turns out we were wrong. So we're being very careful here. We kind of point out other people who are out there who are sort of showing some skepticism of Georgia. We're certainly not doing this to, like, fan the flames of hysteria. And, you know, we're just talking about the ongoing narrative and what perhaps Georgia needs to do to make sure this is not the case. The latest example of what looks to be a little bit of skepticism about Georgia out there right now, even though Georgia almost certainly will be the number one team in the real polls, AP Top 25 when it comes out later in the summer, coaches poll when it comes out as well. Georgia's almost certainly going to be the number one team in those polls. And some of the unofficial media, you know, influencer type, you know, top 25 stuff, seeing a little bit of skepticism about Georgia. We talked some about that yesterday. Latest example, an even more prominent voice, Fox Sports Joel Klatt, who has his updated spring top 25. Joel Klatt also has Ohio State ahead of Georgia. So there you go. You got people all over the place seemingly, or the start of a little bit of momentum here for Ohio State that has been very, very aggressive in the offseason, allegedly spending big on NIL, making such a move in sort of a desperation win-now mode because their hated rival Michigan just won the national championship. But now you got a couple of people, Klatt from Fox, What's-His-Face from 24/7 Sports. They have now put Ohio State ahead of Georgia in their spring top 25. Now, what we said yesterday, we're going to re-up this here right now, is if you're Georgia and you don't want this to be true, when the season's done, if you want to make sure you're the number one team and not these Ohio State Buckeyes, to me it comes down to three things. It comes down to Georgia having the best offensive line in America because, as we pointed out, that is an area for going on a year in which Ohio State's been pretty weak, or at least, you know, by a championship standard, pretty weak. And so if Georgia's offensive line turns out to be as good as it appears that it might be on paper, that could be a big box checked in favor of Georgia in comparison to Ohio State. We'd say the same thing about quarterback, where the Buckeyes seem to have almost everything figured out with their roster. They could be, you know, perhaps very good on defense. But at quarterback, is it Will Howard, a guy who transfers over from Kansas State? It's not even obvious to me. He's better than Kyle McCord was last year. Is it Julian Sayin, a quarterback that Alabama seemed okay with turning loose? Is a guy like that going to really have a chance to get significant playing time, perhaps even eventually be the starter at Ohio State? That seems like a pretty big roll of the dice to go with a first-year player when everything else on the roster seems sort of figured out. A guy like Devin Brown is still there, but sometimes the fact that you're still there and, you know, you're just sort of there without making much of a mark, that sort of perhaps tells you everything you need to know. On the other hand, at Georgia, Carson Beck, as we've talked about, could be the number one overall pick. That if Beck really lives into that role and lives into that label, that's potentially a huge advantage for Georgia to kind of have a quarterback who could be the face of the sport in comparison to the sort of three-headed, you know, murky picture of whatever Ohio State is. And then the third thing we said yesterday is that, hey, if Georgia wants to make sure that by the end of the year it's not Ohio State ranked ahead of Georgia, but Georgia on top of Ohio State and everybody else, then it obviously comes down to improved play from the defensive line. Because in the one big game that changed the fate of last season, Michigan beat Alabama, Georgia didn't. It was Michigan getting after Jalen Milroe, especially in the first half, that really led to that victory, something that Georgia was either, you know, just for whatever reason, it just didn't do. And we've obviously traveled that path many, many times. But the point I also wanted to get to here in light of the fact that Joel Klatt has also got Ohio State ahead of Georgia is when I talked to John Stinchcomb about this yesterday, the former Georgia All-American, in getting his opinion about the Ohio State and Georgia tale of the tape here right now, John, I want to make sure you heard this, brought up a pretty important point that is going to matter here in 2024 when we compare Georgia to a team like Ohio State or other teams in the SEC. Who you play may end up being just as important as how you play. This is what John Stinchcomb said about that yesterday.
Well, I think this. I think you look at the schedule that Ohio State has versus Georgia has, and I see them having a much easier path. But I'm less concerned about where you start than where you finish.
So I think that John's bringing up a pretty good, important point. If you look at whatever your favorite sports book is, assuming you have one, at the current odds to win this year's upcoming national championship, Ohio State only plays like three teams who even show up on the list of any reasonable number of possible championship contenders. They only play three of those teams, and one of them is Penn State. Here's what I can promise you. The rapture will occur before Penn State wins a big football game. We all know that. Nittany Lions don't beat anyone of note, anyone of consequence. So it's basically a two-game season for Ohio State. It's Michigan at the end of the year. That's the game that Ryan Day probably needs to win, or otherwise he might get fired. They do have to go on the road to Oregon, but they avoid Washington whenever they're going to be in a kind of a post-Kalen DeBoer world. They avoid USC, whatever they're going to be in a post-Caleb Williams world. They avoid those teams. It's Michigan, it's Penn State, it's Oregon, and that's essentially the entire season for Ohio State. By comparison, Georgia plays in the regular season alone five of the top 15 national championship favorites here right now, and a few of those come fairly early in the year here. So it is just true that Georgia plays a much more difficult schedule. So in order for us not to get it wrong the way we did a year ago, we have to be realistic about everything. That Georgia this year is just going to be asked to navigate a different schedule than certain teams are going to have to navigate. Now, we also think that Georgia as a roster may be set up well to handle that, but there's no doubt it is an obstacle to be overcome. I thought John Stinchcomb got that right yesterday. And it is certainly something we'll be paying very close attention to as the season approaches. And that is Around the Doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro. And by the way, speaking of some of these big games that make this Georgia schedule so daunting, we are so excited this year with the fact that Dog Nation is going to be on hand for so many of those games with Dog Nation invasions. In other words, if Georgia's got to go on the road to play big game, then Dog Nation wants to be going too, and we want you to be a part of that there as well. Dog Nation Invasions now powered by ATL Sports Trips, your chance to be a part of this. We're partnering with ATL Sports Trips to offer you three big opportunities with tailgates here this fall. A lot of you remember just how much fun it was last year on the Dog Nation Invasion on the Tennessee River. We had an amazing time there on that. And this year it's going to be the same kind of fun with the Chick-fil-A kickoff game against Clemson coming up. Also, obviously, the trip to Tuscaloosa there in September for the first ever SEC game for Kalen DeBoer. We're going to let him know what that's all about. And then the big one in October as Georgia goes to Texas for the first time with Texas in the SEC. Atlanta Sports Trips got you taken care of on all this. Travel packages, hotel packages for those of you who want that. If you just want to be a part of the tailgate, you have your chance to do that there as well. Atlanta Sports Trips is the preferred tailgate partner of Dog Nation. So we want you to be a part of Dog Nation Invasion on the season opening kickoff against Clemson, going to Tuscaloosa in September, going to Austin in October. This is going to be an extraordinary experience. Atlanta Sports Trips bringing it to you, partnering with Dog Nation now, the preferred provider for our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate. So to find out more, you can get your information if you go to dognation.com/tailgate for more on that. You can go to the website, dognation.com/tailgate. Take you right there. You can also check them out online at atlsportstrips.com. So really fun stuff coming up. Big Dog Nation Invasion events. Kicking off against Clemson, September against Alabama, October at Texas. We want you there. ATL Sports Trips now powering our Dog Nation Invasion tailgates. Can't wait for all of that. All right, so there's a lot going on around Georgia football here right now. The guy who has his finger on the pulse of all of that is our good buddy Connor Riley. Let's talk to him right now here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let's say hello to Connor Riley. Always glad to have Connor on the program. Connor just back from a great vacation. Connor, I typically like people to have their privacy, things like that, but do you mind telling people what you did? A little excursion through the Grand Canyon. How was that experience?
I think it was better than going to the Met Gala. I got a chance to backpack through the Grand Canyon for two days, camped overnight at the North Rim on Friday night, 44 miles in total, 11,000 feet in elevation gain. and got to do it with one of my best friends in the world. Got to see him push himself further than I think he had ever thought that he could. And so just a really, really cool trip and glad that I was able to take it.
So I have flown over the Grand Canyon a couple of times. I've never actually been to it, or I guess in it, you might say. I always see people on video and stuff riding those donkeys. Do you ride one of those donkeys on the Grand Canyon? I always see people doing that.
I did see people riding mules through the Grand Canyon. Ironically, my best friend's wife, she a few years ago, they went to the Grand Canyon together. And I think she put it best. She hiked 7/10 of the mile in, and she's not a big heights person. And she decided that she had seen enough. And I would say for the views, for the vistas and all that, if that's what you want out of the Grand Canyon, I think 7/10 of a mile is more than enough to see the Grand Canyon. But the entire trip was just spectacular.
Could be very true. So one of the things I talked to John Stinchcomb about yesterday was the fact that I sort of enjoy this time of year. I like the talking season stuff. I think that's kind of fun. I like the sort of tail of the tape that's going on right now with the team that's gotten the most buzz in the offseason, Ohio State, in comparison to Georgia. I think that's kind of a fun thing to do. It helps us pass the time before the season gets here. What do you make of what seems to be a little bit of a growing momentum? Now, I don't think this is the official polls. It's certainly not going to be reflected, I don't think, in the gambling odds, where I believe that Georgia will remain the betting favorite. But what do you make of, like, media types seemingly in growing number kind of saying, you know what, for now I'm going to put Ohio State ahead of Georgia as my personal preseason number one? What do you make of those who are doing that right now?
I think it's easy. I think Ohio State's a big fan base. You have people in the national media who pander to them and curry favor in that regard. I think you saw something similar last year with Michigan. It worked out for Michigan. They were able to win a national title with sort of a once in a lifetime team. Not in dissimilar, in my opinion, to what Georgia had in 2021 or LSU had in, say, 2019. So I think part of this is, you know, people want to pick something new. People want to pick something different. They want to seem smart. I wouldn't necessarily put all my eggs in a Ryan Day basket there, but I think it's people trying to do something different, whereas Georgia, they've won two national championships, and so they're not the sort of new flavor anymore in that aspect of it. And look, Ohio State, they went out and made a point to add players via the transfer portal. You know, they go get Quinshon Judkins, who was one of the best running backs in the SEC, though they already had one of the best running backs in the Big Ten last year in Trevion Henderson. They go out and add Caleb Downs, the second best safety in America, potentially. And so you understand why there's some excitement there. But if I'm Georgia, I kind of like all this attention that they're getting, specifically when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. A lot of people talking, saying Ohio State's going to have the best defense in the country. And this is a Georgia team that after last year, I think has a lot to come out and prove on the defensive side of the ball. And so if people are out there saying that Ohio State's the standard for defense in college football right now, I got a feeling Kirby Smart's going to use that as fuel and turn that into something that this Georgia defense is going to thrive on and potentially use during the 2024 season.
And the other thing I'd say about that is like, I get the desperation coming out of Columbus because their hated rival won the national championship. They sort of feel like they've been kind of off the top national stage now for more years than they're probably comfortable with. But Connor, you know this because you've watched this your entire life the same way that I have. Just because you want it doesn't mean you get it. You know, there's more to doing this than just wanting it. And I think that sort of speaks to the sort of what Jim Harbaugh once said about Ryan Day, about being born on third base and thinking he hit a triple. You know, it's not your turn to win. You know what I'm saying? It's like you have to take it from somebody else. You don't just get to, like, you know, sort of stand there and let the game cycle back to you. It doesn't, you know, quite work that way. And so I do think we're going to find out what Ohio State's made of. But the other point here, Connor, is that, you know, last year we kind of mocked those who were touting Michigan. They turned out to be right. We turned out to be wrong. Some of the same kind of stuff about Alabama, we turned out to be wrong on that. So we're trying to be careful around here about not falling into the same trap again of, hey, if Georgia doesn't take care of its business, then maybe Ohio State will rise up and take the title. Because, you know, last year when Georgia had a chance to, you know, sort of win the big game against Alabama, it came up short there in that regard. So I think because we did see that happen, unfortunately, for Georgia a year ago, you at least have to be a little careful that you don't do something that opens the door for somebody else, because Michigan ultimately won the national championship because Georgia did not take care of business against Alabama.
Right. You don't want to end up like Tom Brady, and at the end of the season, everyone's coming in to roast you for all your shortcomings there. And so I think for Georgia this season, like, look, they got to take care of business. They have, as has been pointed out, I think on paper, a more difficult schedule. We'll see how that plays out. I know there are a lot of people out there, including a certain producer behind the glass, who thinks Georgia's going to lose to Texas this season. That is not the game that worries me the most at this point in time. I think that game against Alabama is certainly one to watch there, just given the way that Alabama and Georgia in particular have played Alabama in recent years. Now, maybe a lot of that falls because of Nick Saban, but I don't think Kirby Smart has coached his best games against Alabama. I think he's been very conservative in those manners, and that's part of the reason why they are 1-5 against Alabama under Kirby Smart. We'll see if that was a Nick Saban thing or if that was truly an Alabama thing. But I think with this schedule coming up, they're going to have multiple chances to make statements there and show that they're one of the best teams in the country. And then it's a new era where it's a 12-team playoff, and you're looking at that Joel Klatt top 25, and you're looking at the teams in there. You know, it's going to be a 12-team playoff. That's going to be more games. And I do maybe believe that as we get to the semifinals and finals, it's going to produce tougher games for those teams at the end, because they're actually going to have to earn it on the field rather than, in some cases, teams being gifted spots into that college football playoff. And so I certainly think that is something to watch there.
Connor's Dog Nation at large partner, Kaylee Manziel, was fired up in my ear a moment ago upon the reference to the game against Texas. So when we did our Dog Nation roundtable the other day, which was really fun, you said something that was really surprising to me at the time, which was that you thought that Georgia would go 12-0 in the regular season. And, you know, I feel like I'm fairly ambitious about Georgia's chances this season, but I think that Georgia can and probably will need to withstand a loss in order to get to that point. Are you just as bullish as ever on Georgia? I know you mentioned the Alabama game a moment ago, but just overall, are you still as bullish as you have been on Georgia winning all of its regular season games? Because I think that's a pretty surprising take.
I am. And I think part of it is because you have so many people out there, including the coward Kaylee Manziel, you know, picking, oh, they're going to go 11-1, and I think they're going to lose that game to Texas. Look, I just don't see it with Texas, quite frankly. They're going in and getting a lot of guys out of the transfer portal in this second window, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. That tells me this defense isn't all that great. And so, you know, I think the gap between these two programs, when Georgia has the ball on offense and Texas has the ball on defense, could be as wide as the Grand Canyon there. And then you look at that schedule. Look, I know Ole Miss beefed up via the transfer portal in the December window. They've owned the Bulldogs have Ole Miss recently there. So I think, you know, if you're able to get through that Alabama game and you have that Texas game, where I have no doubt Kirby Smart's going to be fired up and ready to want to see Georgia win and play well in that game. You know, I think the schedule becomes a lot more manageable there. You know, Tennessee falls on an interesting point in the schedule after that Ole Miss game. We'll see what they look like with new quarterback and Nico Amoliva, but that game's at home. And again, similar to Ole Miss, Georgia has just dominated Tennessee when they have played them. So it's not like there's a, you know, a road game at Missouri this year, a team that Georgia has admittedly struggled against, though they also always find a way to win there. And there's no Nick Saban type figure in my mind out there as well. So I do like this Georgia team a lot. I think Carson Beck, as I've stated before, is going to pull a Joe Burrow, number one overall pick, national championship, Heisman Trophy winner. And I think with this defense, again, I think they're going to show their teeth a little bit more this year, and they're going to have a better season than they did a year ago, even if losing, you know, some big-time talent and guys like Kamari Lassiter and Javon Bullard in the secondary there.
I want to finish by talking about Carson Beck here in a moment, but to follow up on this, here's my theory on the schedule overall. I think that energy is a finite resource, that once it's depleted, it is not easily restored. And so if I were to look at a 12-game schedule for Georgia, I would say I don't really know where the loss is coming. But if you are, as I mentioned a moment ago, playing five of the top 15 most likely national champions, according to the odds makers, that those games do take something out of you, I think, that leaves you less in the tank for another game that you're going to play. What was the last regular season game that Georgia lost? It was a team like, what, South Carolina in 2019? Am I right about that? Was the last regular season loss?
2020.
Oh, yeah. I've written that off. 2020 didn't count. That's a pandemic. But whatever. There is this thought that maybe Georgia loses a game that's perhaps not on the radar of a loss right now, simply because the work you do to win these other games just leaves you a little less in the tank. As abstract as that thought is, I guess that's where I would be, that I do think that Georgia probably loses a game. I don't have any idea what that game is. There's no game I'd want it to be. I don't really have an idea of what that is. I just think 12 games against this level of opponent is a pretty long stretch to try to go unbeaten against.
So there are two points that I want to make here. One, you know, in looking back at past Georgia schedules, you know, common off-season talking point has been how weak or easy they seem, you know, when you take that, you know, long stretch out, or when we're talking about this in the middle of May. But, you know, they played in a lot of top 10 games recently over the years during the regular season. You know, Arkansas in 2021, I think Kentucky was a top 10 game potentially in 2021 there as well. Tennessee was the number one team in the country. Nobody predicted that when they came in 2022. And there were probably even fewer people predicting that Georgia was going to stomp them that day, like they ended up doing so. So, you know, Ole Miss was a big game last year, you know, top 15, Missouri as well. Not very many people had that. And in making that point, why can't necessarily the opposite be true, where you do have these big games, but maybe there are some letdowns along the way. Yeah. Maybe Ole Miss, you know, finally does the what you think Ole Miss always seems to do and underperforms under Lane Kiffin this year. What if Alabama completely falls apart under Kalen DeBoer in his first year there? What if Texas, you know, I'm not saying they're going to go 7-5, but they struggle with the adjustment into the SEC in terms of the week by week, you know, physicality that comes with playing in this league that, quite frankly, is just different from the Big 12 there. And so, you know, I do think there's a possibility that some of these teams on Georgia's schedule that are hyped up as they are underperform a little bit. And the other thing that you just brought up there, you know, Georgia's last regular season loss was in 2020. This is not a political statement. I'm just making this as a point. Georgia has not lost a regular season game since Joe Biden has been elected president here. And so, you know, they've done it 3 years in a row. Why can't they do it a fourth year? I know the schedule on paper is more difficult, but they've, you know, played difficult games before. They've played talented teams before, and Georgia's found a way to win just about all of those games. So, you know, three straight years is a large enough sample size, in my opinion, to maybe start giving them the benefit of the doubt that they can continue to go through this regular season streak. They're going to lose a game at some point. I'm not saying it's going to continue this way forever. But I do think with what we've seen from this current Georgia team, I still have this strong belief that they're going to be able to go through and win every one of those games on an individual basis.
Really, really fascinating stuff. I want to finish with this. There's been some weird stuff around Carson Beck as of late. We joked the other day about the Colin Cowherd thing. I have no idea what he means when he said, oh, he thinks that Carson Beck is Georgia good. I don't even really have even a definition, even a working definition of perhaps what that means. There was also an ESPN reporter on X of the day that was sort of saying something to the effect of, are we really talking about Carson Beck as the most famous returning player in college football? And my question is, well, I mean, like, how famous do you need somebody to be? Beck drives the Lamborghini. You know, he's, you know, at the betting favorite to win the Heisman. As you said, he could be the number one overall, you know, draft pick. He's certainly no less famous than Joe Burrow was when he started the 2019 season. Like, to me, the conversation around Beck right now, I think, is really weird, both from people kind of outside the college football sphere like Colin Cowherd, but also people inside like ESPN reporters. There seems to be just, and I'm not talking about like I'm a Georgia fan and I'm offended by this, I'm sort of perplexed by it. There seems to be a weird conversation ongoing about Beck. What do you attribute that to?
He's kind of old school. He is not a souped up athlete. He's not like a Josh Allen type at the position. He wasn't a big name recruit coming out. And I do think that plays a big, big factor in this in terms of, you know, the hype, the sexiness surrounding Carson Beck here. He was a 4-star recruit, I believe finished inside the, you know, around like the 250 ranked prospect, you know, not famous, waited his turn. It didn't create a lot of headlines prior to becoming Georgia's starting quarterback. And when you watch him play, you know, he's not breaking tackles and ripping off long runs or escaping the pocket. He's just sort of calmly standing in there, delivering the passes where they need to be, and not all that sexy. He's not like the Peyton Manning type either, who looks like the maestro orchestrating things in front of an orchestra there. He simply goes out and does his job in that regard. And so because of that, I think there's maybe this lukewarmness to Carson Beck. He's sort of like a baseball pitcher who, you know, doesn't throw 100 miles an hour, which seems very rare these days, but is a guy who just goes out there, throws 94, 93 miles an hour, but is going to be able to give you 6-7 innings, and really help you win a lot of football games. And I think in a day and age where everyone wants, you know, the bright lights, the shiny things, Shador Sanders types players, Beck is a little bit of an opposite of that. And so because of that, I think that he's not a controversial figure, and thus people try to use that potentially against him.
So let me ask you this to close it out then. If I'm a Georgia fan, what am I rooting for here? Am I rooting for him to sort of stay under the radar, a la the old Bill Barcells line about not wanting a celebrity quarterback? Or am I rooting for him to play so well that all the people right now who kind of say, ah, who's Carson Beck? He's not famous enough. They look really foolish come this time next April. Like, what do I want for Beck? To really get on the platform and become as famous as any college quarterback has been in recent years? Or to kind of sort of be the sort of blended in face along with everybody else on this Georgia roster? What's a better overall outcome for the Dogs?
I think it's probably going to be, unfortunately, to not answer your question, somewhere in the middle of the two. I think Carson Beck has to be one of Georgia's three best players for them to win a national championship this season. And that wasn't true, in my opinion, of those first two national championships there. And then, but I also think that he's not the type of person that's going to want to go out there and make big headlines. Like, yes, he got the Lamborghini, but when pressed and asked about it, sort of just said, it's just a car to me. And he's a car guy and he enjoys that. And so, you know, it's a lot of other people projecting things onto him, but he does not strike me as the kind of guy that wants to go out there and make headlines and be a big star. I think he just wants to go out there, play quarterback. And as he has said, win championships for Georgia. He's going to need to be great for Georgia in 2024 for that to happen. And through that, I do think that there'll be a good bit of famous, you know, that ties into this. But do I expect Carson Beck to be the type of player that after he scores a touchdown against Tennessee, throws up a cell phone gesture? I don't think that's in him either. I think he's a very steady Eddie and a calming presence and a guy that's going to elevate his game in 2024. And as I've put my name out there, I think Georgia's going to go 12-0, and I think Carson Beck is going to be a big reason why. But before I throw it back to UBA, I do want to ask, Anthony Edwards is just amazing. And I do wonder, and, you know, I think about your show a lot, listen to it on Monday. What does Anthony Edwards have to do to get to lead your show? He did the Jordan shrug last night. He's in the process of potentially sweeping the NBA champion Denver Nuggets out of the playoffs. Like, what does Anthony Edwards have to do to get a real segment on your show?
So we have been talking about him in our comments section a little bit here, our RS Andrews cool down and our first and 15. We've talked about Ant-Man here a little bit. What I know about the NBA these days could fit into my pocket. So, you know, I'm not super aware of the league, but I do know enough to know that I believe that Edwards has been the story of the playoffs thus far, right? More significant than anything else. So I guess the question I am wondering about now is, how much does Ant-Man really claim Georgia? Because he was really only here for a few months. Obviously, Georgia is going to do everything it can to claim Ant-Man, and it should. But how much is Ant-Man claiming Georgia? I believe there was an homage to UGA and a sneaker that he's got coming out. You may know more about that than I do. You know, I know there was a little bit of an exchange between Edwards and, like, Ernie Johnson on TV the other day, but that seemed more prodded by Ernie than prodded by Ant-Man. Does Edwards claim Georgia very – I know they don't do this in the NBA, but, like, you know, I like when you do the starting lineups, you know, like, is he saying he's from the University of Georgia, or is he going to say from the School of Hard Knocks? Like, where does Edwards say he grew up, and where does he say he went to school?
I will say he recently spoke about his relationship with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, also a former Georgia basketball player, and spoke about how he views Caldwell-Pope as an older brother, albeit an older brother that he wants to go out there and kill. So I do think that Edwards is very aware of the Georgia tie-ins and the Georgia backgrounds there. And obviously he has the new signature shoe with the Georgia colorway on it. Unfortunately, he wears it and is sponsored by Adidas, and Georgia is a Nike school. But there is some very real Georgia in Anthony Edwards. And I will say, my friends and I who text about him, you're seeing some national media people now try and get Anthony Edwards away from the Minnesota Timberwolves, because that's just what the NBA national media people are going to do. Those people need to get in line, because my friends have been trying to get Anthony Edwards on the Hawks for about 2 years. So I think Anthony Edwards, he's real Atlanta, and also through his actions, he is real Georgia as well.
So I'll tell you this, and I'll let you go. In addition to obviously liking him as a former Georgia player, you know, I interviewed him when he was still in high school, and it was one of these, I don't know, sort of fancy style interviews. I spent like 2 hours with him, and I really learned a lot. I'm going to sound like I'm, you know, vying for some sort of journalism award. I'm not, but I really felt like I learned a lot about him that day. It was very fascinating to see. a guy like that, how he was wired. He was very intense, nice guy, but very intense. I mean, you know, even off the record, very, very clearly, you know, was driven to go out there. And like you say, you know, wants to kill Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like just sort of the attitude he takes towards everything. He was very driven to annihilate anybody who sort of stepped in his way. So when I think about Edwards, I'm proud of the fact that obviously went to Georgia, but, you know, I spent a good bit of time with him, and interesting to see where he is now in the NBA, only a couple of years after that. So I'm personally thrilled by it. I guess I'm sort of on the sidelines here trying to figure out how much this elevates Georgia in the process.
Okay, so you're looking at it like, how does this help Georgia? So, like, if he gets the, you know, if he gets to the finals, and I don't think he's going to win the finals because I'm a Boston Celtics fan. I would like to see the Celtics win. But theoretically, if there is a parade in Minnesota and he's wearing a Georgia jersey, I think, you know, that probably gives you the okay. So,
I'll say it like this. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I'll say it like this. I think Edwards right now sort of feels like almost the biggest story in sports to me in terms of people love the NBA playoffs. He's dominating. The bigger Georgia story is what's going on with Charlie Condon right now. I feel like Condon is about to – I mean, I know the Barstool main account tweeted about him yesterday or something like that. I think that Condon's about to transcend something. I was at the game on Sunday. You can just sort of tell there's a little bit of a different vibe coming around him. Condon's not a bigger story than Ant-Man is in terms of the global sports world. But in terms of what's happening for Georgia, this Charlie Condon thing I think is turning into something. Edwards is a huge story. I don't know how big of a story that is for Georgia, but what's happening for Charlie Condon, this sort of feels like the start of something for me.
He's at, I believe, 33 home runs right now. If he has a big series this weekend against South Carolina and he starts getting close to 40, like, that's going to be insane. You know, already has the Georgia record, already blown through that. I think, seven straight games with a home run now. You know, a few weeks ago there was, you know, with Brock Bowers moving on, you know, Condon was now pretty clearly like the best athlete at Georgia. Condon is putting forth like an all-time college baseball team. And it's just stunning to watch, and has totally, in Wes Johnson's first year, brought a ton of energy into that program. I don't think, certainly after the first series against Kentucky, there were a lot of people talking about this Georgia team as one that could make the tournament. If they play, you know, if they go 4-2 and win their last two series here in South Carolina and Florida, two very doable things, in my opinion, they're going to end up hosting a regional, which Nobody had that coming there. And Condon is not the only reason why. There are a lot of players having good years for them, but he is easily the biggest reason why. And so for him to go out and have the season that he's had, simply stunning.
Yeah, this is not like Brent Rooker a couple years ago from Mississippi State, or one of these like really good players that seemingly always come into the SEC. This is just something different than that. And I think it's starting to transcend just the regular college baseball chatter. So I find that to be really fascinating. Connor, it's a fun conversation. Glad to have you back in town here again. Love to have your stuff up at dognation.com. And we will look forward to having you back on the show again very soon there as well.
Yep. As always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so we do our R.S. Andrews Cooldown, which is our comment section of the show. By the way, I got to have a chance to have lunch with Dari Peyro here today. I'm looking forward to that. And we do our first and 15 before the show. And so Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards, who played basketball at Georgia for a year, that subject comes up there a lot. And I am a big sports fan. I don't follow general sports as much as I used to because I have two kids and they absorb every waking moment of my life. But I'm still a big sports fan. So the big sports topics are still really interesting to me, even if I don't follow the NBA nearly as closely as I used to. And it is just obvious that right now, Ant-Man, who a couple of years ago was a part of a Georgia team that, you know, obviously didn't do very much, but now, I mean, he looks like a sensation, the best young player in the sport. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how much extra steam Georgia perhaps gets from that. And as I said, you know, speaking of extra steam, I mean, what's happening for Charlie Condon right now is remarkable, remarkable. It is a very fun thing. Now, speaking of having fun, boy, I got some fun coming up later on this summer. And, you know, I was trying to put this out into the universe and see what kind of bites I could get on this. And sure enough, it's going to fall into place here. Getting a chance to be among the very first to step foot and sail on Utopia of the Seas. Now, anytime Royal Caribbean opens a brand new cruise ship, obviously I'm, you know, very excited about that. But in particular, I sort of feel like this is going to be kind of a home ship for me, maybe a little bit. An Oasis class ship, brand new for those 3- and 4-night sailings. Out of Port Canaveral, this will be the most convenient thing for my family. And I think for many of you, it's going to be the same thing there as well, because it's the best of everything that Royal Caribbean has to offer, including some new restaurant concepts unlike anything that's ever been tried before at sea. And you get that at a very convenient port. You can drive to Port Canaveral. We frequently do. You can sail 3-night long weekend, 4-night getaways. Just an incredible, incredible experience. So it starts in July. That means it's time for you to start booking your travel late summer into the fall, early 2025. Jessica Slater can help you out with all of that. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. Utopia of the Seas has arrived. And they've got the Royal Railway restaurant that's going to be like, I told you this before, it's like a train car on the ship that has sort of augmented reality situation with the windows that makes it seem like you're rolling down the rails while you're sailing on the sea. It's just one of the really cool, clever ideas that Royal Caribbean's always looking to push the envelope with. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Let's go cruise around the SCC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And I saw a piece at CBSSports.com with the recruiting reporter Andrew Ivins. And I thought this was really interesting. Looking at some kind of newcomers to college football, freshman-type players. They're not all true freshmen, but sort of first, second-year players, former elite recruits who are living up to the hype. And this isn't related to Georgia, but it is related to teams that Georgia play. And I thought this was pretty interesting. So here are the few of the SEC names that Ivins mentions as earning pretty good buzz. And I do think that while we're obviously fixated on Georgia around here, paying close attention to the buzz being generated by teams that Georgia plays or Georgia rivals, probably pretty important. One of the names that Ivins mentions is Cam Coleman from Auburn. Coleman's a guy we've talked about a few times now on an Auburn team that we don't quite know right now how good they're going to be. We know that Hugh Freeze needs a better second year. Quarterback-wise, how well set up are they for that? As we said yesterday, they didn't exactly attack the transfer portal with a whole lot of vigor, you know, not getting particularly high marks there on that. But if you watch the Auburn spring game, you have to acknowledge is that the receiver, Cam Coleman, who they had a pretty long recruiting fight for, he looks like a future star, and he may even be a current star. He may be one of the better players in the SEC here this year. How do you get him the football? I think for Auburn, that's still yet to be determined. But Coleman's got a pretty good look to him right now. DJ Lagway, the same way the Florida quarterback. We love making fun of Florida, and obviously the Jaden Rashada stuff has given us another chance to do that. The Florida fan response has been, well, that's okay, we got DJ Lagway. And I'll acknowledge here that to a certain extent, being happy with Lagway seems to make some sense because a lot of people are saying good things about Lagway, a little bit different than some of the quarterback recruits they brought in previous years. It seems like he might be kind of what he's supposed to be. The big question there, though, is what do you do with him here this year? Because right now, Graham Mertz, who was not terrible a year ago, is slated to be the starter. Now, if you're Billy Napier, what you're hopeful to do is, because we expect Florida to lose some games here this year, if you're Billy Napier, what you're hopeful to do is to say, well, you can't fire me right now. I haven't got a chance to use my quarterback yet. I don't know how well that works, though, just given the rough and tumble nature of the current SEC and given the fact that there's going to be a big spotlight on athletic director Scott Strickland through all of this there, too. I wonder if things go south for Florida, can they wait a full year to bring in DJ Lagway? Can they afford to be as slow bringing him along as Tennessee was a year ago with Nico Iamaleva? I would suggest probably not. You know, Mertz was one of the few, I don't want to say bright spots because he wasn't that great, but one of the few net positives for Florida a year ago. But if it starts to unravel for Florida, finding out what you have in DJ Lagway, that may be the only option for Billy Napier to have a chance to save himself there at Florida at all. So that should be end up being pretty interesting. Alabama's got a defensive back on this list. I also saw Ivins mention Dylan Raiola, the Nebraska quarterback, who, I mean, seemed like he did have a good Nebraska spring game. Obviously, that's not a great roster. There is some chatter that Nebraska may be in like the upper half of the Big Ten here this year because of the excitement they have about Raiola. Let me tell you something. I know the Big Ten's making all kinds of money, got all kinds of contracts and media rights and things like that. If the presence of one quarterback alone puts Nebraska in sort of the winning record bowl category, kind of upper half moving towards upper third of the Big Ten, that would tell me a lot about that league. It really, really would. Speaking of quarterbacks, I mentioned one more topic here just for a moment, and that is that South Carolina has named a starting quarterback here as well, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's Lenora Sellers. Now, it sounds like that competition is still going to be ongoing. You'll remember that, speaking of Auburn quarterbacks, Robbie Ashford came over from South Carolina. With all due respect to Ashford, he's a terrific athlete. I don't believe he's an SEC starting quarterback, but he's a guy that you probably want to play and you probably want to have in the mix. And so for now, Shane Beamer has said, going into camp, we're going to treat Lenora Sellers as our starting quarterback. You've maybe heard me say this before. Sometimes there's value in having a competition, leaving it open, let the best man win. Sometimes there is some value in saying, we're going to put our faith in this guy. We're going to put our efforts in developing around this guy. And we're going to ask his teammates to buy into him. There's sometimes some value in that. That if you feel like you have an idea of who your guy is going to be, going ahead to name him, I think sometimes has a little bit of value. Maybe that's what Shane Beamer's doing here right now. I expect that Ashford still has a role here because his athleticism is kind of hard to keep off the field. But for now, it looks like Sellers is going to be listed as the starting quarterback there for South Carolina. Shane Beamer says at least going into fall camp. And we'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Now, before we wrap up here today, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Mr. Electric there as well. Dog Nation's choice for all your residential and commercial electrical needs. Been in business for nearly 30 years, taking good care of folks, repair work, installations, lighting work, and, of course, doing everything with the utmost electrical safety. If that's not enough, they've also got a team of licensed experts, insured electricians, and upfront flat rate pricing. And this is true whether you need 24-hour emergency service or you just want a quote from some work that you want to get done. They've got you covered. And speaking of having you covered, there's that $29 service fee that's always going to be waived anytime you get some repair work done. So I want you to find this neighborly company online at MrElectricAtlanta.com. One more time, that is MrElectricAtlanta.com. All right, so I'm going to kind of go down here below the desk for a moment. Got an incredible collection of stuff here. So a guy named Jonathan Stevens, who is kind of a part of our Dog Nation family, came by to visit us yesterday. And you're talking about an amazing thing. He gave us all kinds of stuff. This is a little bit easier for you to see, so I'm going to show this to you. So he's a part of the Navy, been stationed on a ship, but really traveled the world. Fascinating life. Some of this stuff is almost like classified. I can't even tell you all about it, I don't think. But fascinating life, serving our country really in harm's way and obviously doing some incredible things. Been stationed on the USS Lewis B. Puller. And he brought the hat here, got the great, just unbelievable naval look to this. He brought us a coin from the ship, a patch from the ship. I've actually been lucky enough to collect a lot of this kind of stuff from some of the service people who were a part of our show and a part of our audience. I am so proud of all of this. I wanted to give Jonathan a golden shoe for being here yesterday in our studio, bringing all this stuff to us. And there is nothing that fills me with more pride than knowing that people who serve our country are part of our audience. And he's about to go be stationed in Sicily, living over there, and going to still be listening to Dog Nation Daily. Been doing that in Bahrain and other places that he's been on board these naval vessels. Like, what an unbelievable honor and privilege for me. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for being here yesterday. Thank you for the incredible gifts that I sort of stole from our boss, BJ, but nonetheless. But thank you so much for all of that and to all of you. Golden shoes to all of the armed services folks who are part of our program on a regular basis. Lousy, stinking Gators. How about 1,277 days? That's how long it's been since Florida has beaten Georgia. That is our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow at Dog Nation Daily, presented by Surf Pro.